I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative. Toronto votes this October. In the lead-up to the 2022 Toronto municipal election, CGRU is reaching out to all candidates in the downtown wards. Today, environmental lawyer and former Environmental Commissioner of Ontario, Diane Sachs, joined CGRU to discuss her decision to run for Ward 11, University Rosedale. As a longtime community member, she hopes to make the ward more affordable, pedestrian-friendly, and a leader in climate action.
My name is Diane Sachs. I am a candidate for Municipal Council in Ward 11, University Rosedale.
Great. And when did you make the decision to run for Ward 11?
In August. I didn't know until the end of July that Mike Layton was withdrawing from the race, and then had to think seriously about whether to run again. As you know, I ran in University Rosedale in the provincial election, so I've spent most of the last 2 years knocking on doors, talking to voters, listening to their concerns, getting to know them better.
So you ran for the Green Party in the recent Ontario election. You helped the party gain more votes in the downtown core. Why did you feel it was the right time to switch from provincial to municipal politics?
We had a great response in Toronto, and in particularly in University Rosedale. By the end of the campaign, there were 1,400 signs, a higher level of enthusiasm and interest in climate and environmental issues than we've ever seen in downtown Toronto. Many people urged me to continue to fight for a livable future and to try to have an influence on what we do. There aren't any opportunities right now at the provincial level. The provincial government has much more money and much more power than the city. But with the Ford government in place, we're not going to see any serious climate action there. And time is running out. So city council makes decisions every day that have a huge impact on our carbon footprint, how much climate damage we do, and our ability to withstand what's coming, both specifically on climate, but also on the intimately related topics of, for example, housing and how we get around. So there's an enormous opportunity right now to put my shoulder to the wheel and to be part of the solutions. And that's more satisfying than just sitting on the sidelines saying, woe is me, we're all in trouble. We are all in trouble, but I'd like to be part of the solution.
All right. So can you please talk to me more about your experiences that you feel prepared you to represent University of Rosedale? I'd especially like to learn more about your time as an environmental lawyer and your extensive work with the Ontario government.
Well, I have a long career. As you know, I finished law school in 1974, and I have been working in Toronto ever since as an environmental and energy lawyer, and then as the last environmental commissioner of Ontario, and then with the Green Party. During my career, I have worked extensively with business. I, of course, ran my own small business for many, many years. And in addition, I have not only worked in government for nearly 20 years, but also advised municipal governments and represented them on a wide range of issues across the province. So I have a detailed knowledge of law and government and business. I know how to translate policy objectives into action and how those laws actually work on the ground. I've been part of writing them. I've been part of enforcing them. I've been part of complying with them. I've been part of evaluating them. I've been part of accountability for them. So I have a unique combination of experiences. And in addition, particularly because of my work as the Environmental Commissioner of Ontario, I have been privileged to receive a high degree of public trust. And I want to repay that trust by working for a better future.
Great. So you've mentioned that you've been a trusted voice as well in University Rosedale. You got to know the community. But on the municipal level, I'd like to mention that Mike Layden, you know, he was there for quite some time in Ward 11 and the former Ward 19. He's also a trusted voice, a familiar face in the community. In your opinion, how will you earn this voter's trust who've been accustomed to Mike for 4 years and have been familiar with him before the ward realignment?
You're absolutely right. Mike Layden has been a great municipal councillor for the last 12 years, and he's held in very high esteem. That's why I didn't even consider running municipally when I expected him to run. Incumbents always have a significant advantage, and Mike has definitely earned the trust and respect in which he is held. But he's gone. So of the leading candidates in University Rosedale, Norm DePasquale, Robin Buxton Potts, and myself, I mean, Robin and Norm have run recently, but not in this ward. They've run elsewhere. Most of their work has been done elsewhere. I have very deep roots in and around University Rosedale, 120 years of roots in and around University Rosedale, which includes my mother was born here, I was born here, my kids were born here, my grandchild was born here. I went to school here, I have worked here. My community's here, my synagogue's here, and as I say, I've spent the last 2 years knocking on doors and talking to people in University Rosedale. We know that name recognition is really important in a municipal campaign. People are busy, and it's particularly hard during a pandemic to get people to focus on a municipal election. People had a pretty hard time focusing on the provincial election, given how many other things are going on in their lives. So I think it will help a lot that so many people saw my face all over the riding. Earlier this year, I was the only candidate who had signs in every part of the riding, and I was the only candidate with my face on the signs. So people had quite a bit of time to get to know me and to get to feel more comfortable with me. What many, many people told me in the provincial election is that they liked who I am and what I stand for and my background and my work, but they felt an obligation to vote for a bigger party to try to stop Ford. Well, that didn't work for them, but it's not a factor that's relevant in this election. In this election, there aren't any parties, at least not officially, and people are choosing an individual counselor and not just trying to stop Doug Ford. So that gives me a chance to build on all the hard work, all the goodwill, all the volunteers, all the signs, and the 600 plus people who donated to my provincial campaign, because they want to see my vision and my voice at a decision-making table. And the only table that's available right now is city council.
So I'm going to get to the platform questions right now. So the first thing is, I'd just like to know your thoughts on affordable housing.
Affordable housing is obviously hugely important. It's important for people at almost all income levels. I mean, even for myself, I would like my children to be able to live somewhere near me so I can get to see them and see my grandchildren. And housing is just super expensive. Fortunately, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. There is lots and lots of research on how to increase housing supply, and housing supply is a critical element of cost. So we need to have missing middle as of right. City of Victoria is leading the way on this right now. Approvals delays add enormously to the cost of housing. Another thing that adds a huge amount of wasteful cost to housing is mandatory car parking requirements, which are positively harmful in the downtown core. So getting rid of those helps reduce the cost of infill housing and makes infill practical on smaller sites. We need to be more flexible in what kinds of housing we allow in the city. There's no reason why we can't have tiny homes and modular housing and garden suites and basement apartments. We need to have legalized and properly regulated rooming houses to make less expensive housing available in more parts of the city. We need inclusionary zoning. We need to expand portable housing benefits. We need a revolving loan fund so that nonprofit housing providers can build and operate more housing. And in addition, we need to protect renters with things like minimum maintenance standards and exploring social impact bonds. There's been some great success, for example, in Denver, using social impact bonds to pay for supportive housing that takes the chronically homeless out of the endless cycle of emergency response, which is enormously expensive. It's much cheaper to provide people with housing.
Great. Great. For the next one, it's related to affordable housing, but I'd like to know your thoughts on building trust in the shelter system and the city's recent responses to tent encampments.
The city has many challenges in providing homes for the homeless. And a lot of those problems are driven by the provincial government. We have dramatically too low funding, for example, for people with disabilities. ODSP is impossible to live on. And that's why in the provincial campaign, I was part of calling for ODSP to be doubled. People do need to have a livable income, which would allow them to pay for housing. But that's something the provincial government has to do and is flatly refusing to do. I agree that we shouldn't have encampments in parks. Green space is very limited in downtown Toronto. As the population grows, there's more and more pressure on it. And turning parks into housing is, I think, a really bad solution. But we can't just kick people out of encampments unless we have somewhere else for them to go. There are, I think, other options. I mean, land is very precious in the city and is under really severe demands, but there are some things that we do with land right now that aren't very good uses. Parking lots, for example, are generally bad for downtowns. And thinking about whether we can turn some of those parking lots into community gardens or parks or housing or some combination is certainly something we could do. Another thing we could be thinking about is the golf courses. We have, I think, three municipal golf courses in Toronto, which provide benefits for a very small number of people. The Indigenous community has a legitimate claim for some land space in Toronto. And I think we should be thinking about whether they're entitled to at least one of those golf courses, whether for food growing or for housing or for some combination, as part of our program of reconciliation. Land back is part of reconciliation. Environmental justice is part of reconciliation. And just throwing people out of parks with nowhere to go doesn't take us closer to that.
Mm-hmm. For the next one, and you've been a strong advocate for this, so climate action.
Yes, I've devoted my entire life to fighting the climate and environmental crises that threaten everything that you and I care about. And we can see that crisis now all over the world as well as here. So it really is urgent. City of Toronto has set great targets, but isn't doing much to achieve them. We need a serious carbon budget that is tied to the financial budget. Both of them force us to face hard choices and to make hard choices. There's a really good conversation tool called POLIS, which has been used around the world to get the public involved in finding common ground as to how we make hard decisions. So I would like to see the public engaged in a platform like that to help us decide, once we get serious about our budget, how are we going to stay within it? We need a climate lens for all city decisions. And we need to look for every opportunity, particularly in two groups. Anything that's fast, cheap, and transformative, and anything that prevents us from locking in more bad things. So what's fast, cheap, and transformative? Well, making walking and biking and transit easier, more convenient, more reliable. That's primarily a question of how we use road space. We should have more space for people to walk. We should have more space devoted to transit so that it's easier to get around without a car. And that also makes the air cleaner and reduces the number of people killed on the streets. At the same time, we need to stop making things worse. Continuing to allow new buildings to be built that depend on burning fossil gas is just locking us in to a deeper and deeper hole that we need to be getting out of. it's time to stop new fossil hookups. Even the International Energy Agency recognizes that. It's too late. We need to be building for the future that we know is coming and not for the last century.
Hey, so this actually leads to my next question for you. So you've mentioned making the city more pedestrian friendly. I know in your blog you put people before cars. So I'd like to know your thoughts on that, as well as expanding public transit.
Well, it's really important in the downtown. People are more important than cars. So some of the examples that I mentioned, widening crowded sidewalks, there needs to be more space for people to walk around and push a stroller and drag groceries and push a wheelchair. Have you ever tried pushing a wheelchair in downtown Toronto? It's really hard. There's lots of bumps. There's not enough space. We need to be able to make more space for people to walk. We need to support the TTC while ridership recovers. So you probably also saw my blog about the TTC and the TTC Riders Program, which is excellent. We need to improve transit service, which includes making service more frequent and more electric buses on dedicated bus lanes, which make transit much more reliable and quick. We need to expand the Fare Pass TTC so that really low-income people can afford to take the TTC. And I love the idea of following Kingston's example and making transit free for high school students, get them on a lifetime pattern of getting around on transit. We need protected cycle tracks so that kids can bike to school and don't have to be driven by their parents. We need better road design to curb speeding, Vision Zero. You know, we keep talking about how terrible it is every time someone gets killed or mangled on the road, but we're not doing much about it. We still have road designs that positively encourage people to speed, and we know that the faster a car or a truck goes, the more likely they are to kill or make life-changing injuries to the people that they hit. We need to give more people access to bikes and e-bikes. So BikeShare is doing a great job. It needs to expand. It needs to have more e-bikes. And we also need a system such as the one that the city of Nelson has to make it easier for people to buy e-bikes. E-bikes are great solutions in the city. They can replace a car for most purposes, but they're expensive. So a lot of people need a way to borrow the capital cost up front and pay it back over time. City of Nelson has a program like that for anybody who pays municipal taxes. The Toronto Home Energy Loan Program could easily be expanded to also cover e-bikes. And that helps many more people to have access to electric bikes, which when combined with safe bike lanes are really a fabulous solution for the city.
For my next one, I'd like to know your thoughts on 2S LGBTQ plus rights.
I am not aware of a lot that the city has to do with that. That's primarily a federal and provincial issue. Certainly, city services should not depend in any way on a person's sexual orientation. And what does that have to do with the city? The move I've seen in many places to single user bathrooms that are gender neutral, that accommodates a lot of people. The city should be neutral. I don't know what else what other opportunities there are for the city. That's an area where I've got more to learn.
Okay, great. For the next one, it's police reform.
Well, this is an area where we really do have, again, good research around the world, that an enormous percentage of first responder calls, police, ambulance, EMS, are responding to addiction issues, mental health issues, family conflicts, that police with their guns and their body armor and so on are not best suited for. It saves money and it saves lives to treat these issues from a mental health perspective. So crisis response teams, some investment in upfront mental health support, mental health hubs in schools and community centers can reduce the number of calls. One of the great examples that I've looked at is Aki Energy in Winnipeg. Now, Winnipeg did some research as to the majority of their police and other first responder calls were driven by addictions and mental health issues. And so that was costing them more than half of their police budget. And it's not very effective. And the people keep cycling through and cycling through. You throw them in jail for a little while, they come back out, you have the same kinds of problems. What Aki Energy showed is that the city can save a large amount of money by giving people an opportunity to learn a skilled trade, in particular becoming renewable energy installers. And so as a result of their work, the majority of certified geothermal installers in Manitoba are First Nations people who used to be cycling through those systems and now have a skilled trade, have been able to install more than $12 million worth of geothermal, particularly for Indigenous communities, and have become heroes in their communities. So we know that there are better alternatives than just sending the police out. What the police do is important. We really need them for the things we need them for, but we shouldn't be using them for responding to mental health. There are better alternatives, cheaper, and save lives.
Right. So for the last thing on the platform, I would like to know your opinion on the strong mayor system and how you will work as a counselor to maintain accountability on the mayor.
I don't think anything that the Ford government does to the city of Toronto is intended for the benefit of the city. Having said that, the people of Ontario elected this government and they have the power to change virtually anything about the city. And we keep seeing Mr. Ford use that power, presumably to get back at the city for rejecting him. It is what it is. I certainly look forward to the opportunity to work with Mayor Tory as best I can. He's been clear that he wants to leave a legacy in his third term. He is, at least to some extent, aware of the climate crisis and the many other pressures that affect downtown areas. So the mayor will have more power. It'll be even more important to be able to work collaboratively with him. And I think that my combination of clear vision combined with pragmatism and a lifetime experience dealing with having to meet my own payroll and working for clients who have to meet payrolls will help me to work with him in a respectful and collaborative fashion. I'll push them as hard as I can.
Before we go, what would you like to tell voters in the lead up to the October election?
Voters in University Rosedale really prize a vibrant, livable downtown. That vibrant, livable downtown is under pressure. There are, I think, 95 current redevelopment, significant redevelopment applications and a whole group of minor variances and other kind of construction. So the city is going to change anyway. If we want a better city next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, then we have to bring this consistent lens to every decision that we make. How is this going to affect climate crisis? How is this going to affect our housing crisis? How is this going to affect how we get around? And those three things have to be dealt with together. Understanding the needs and the language of the city and the major stakeholders that it deals with in order to find win-win solutions. And we need to get on with that now. We can't default just to the status quo because that'll take us to disaster. And neither is it worthwhile embracing airy-fairy ideas where we don't have a practical solution, like one of my competitors saying, okay, every building is going to be retrofitted. Well, okay, how are we going to do that? The city doesn't have the power to make that happen or the money to make that happen. We need to focus on combining a powerful and clear and bold vision with a real understanding of how things get done. And I can be that voice and I can be that vision.
Right. And how can voters learn more about your campaign?
My website is voteforDiane.ca. We're building out more information every day. And I encourage people to go and take a look at it. You'll see a long list of endorsements that I've received. You can see some of my writing. You can see some of my reports. As environmental commissioner, I wrote 17 reports, many of which are directly relevant to the choices that the city has to make. You know, I've been a public person for many, many years. There's lots of opportunity for people to get a look at who I am and what I do and see if I'm the voice that they want at City Hall. And I think I am.
That was Diane Sachs, candidate for Ward 11, University Rosedale. Toronto's election is scheduled for October 24th. I'm Daniel Centeno. You're listening to CGRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative,